The U.S. strikes Iran. The regime loses its leader, but the U.S. military loses four heroes. Today on the Steve Holmstrom Show, our congressional delegation responds. Our gas prices are set to go up. Our allies are slow to support us. Our president says more casualties are likely, and our neighbors gather in Fargo to celebrate while others criticize. Just a few things to talk about today, huh? You never quite know what the day is going to hold or the weekend is going to hold. I woke up Saturday morning and did what I normally do, flip on the TV just to see what's going on in the world, throw on Fox News Channel, and holy smokes, what happened overnight. And the news cycle has been flying all weekend. Of course, people taking sides for and against, a lot of people in the middle not really sure. They kind of like it. They have some questions. And everywhere in between. And so we're going to try to bring you a lot of perspective today on what is happening. But we're also going to give you some opportunities today just to vent a little bit, celebrate a little bit, pump your fist, say, go Trump, go. Ask a question that you might have. Want to make sure that you have an opportunity to weigh in today. And I especially want to hear from you if you are a veteran. Because no question, when you look at what has happened there, there's no way you can spin this other than to say it was a magnificently worked operation. Yes, there have been casualties. But when you take into account what has happened compared to that, you have to say it was an amazing job of execution by the greatest military in the world. At the same time, you do have four warriors who are now dead. And so if you're a veteran, I want to hear from you today on your perspective on this. Are you one of those that's pumping your fist and saying, yes, this is what our military should have always been, and we are again? Do you look at this and say, I don't know if we did the right thing? Where are you at if you have served our country? It's one thing for somebody like me to sit here and say, well, here's kind of what I think. It's another if you've been in those situations before, and you know the horrors of war, but you also know what that process can bring about to our country and the world. So going to try to give you some chances to do that. We're going to continue to do what we always do here on the show, though, and that is bring you as much information as possible so that you can kind of sort it out yourself and decide what you think. We've got one guest today, Dr. Thomas Ambrosio. He's a political science professor at NDSU, and I like to have him on when there is significant international politics to discuss. And we certainly have that today. And I have a number of questions that I want to ask Dr. Ambrosio. Maybe not all of them are answerable, but I have a number of questions here about what we did with Operation Midnight Hammer, and did that not do as much as we thought, or is this just we saw enough of a threat that we wanted to get involved again? Why our allies were slow to jump in with us on this one besides Israel? The Iranian people, the president called on them to say, hey, this is your moment now. Take back your country. Well, that sounds good, but what would it take to actually do that? Do the Iranian people have the ability to create a governing alternative? I don't know. If that happened and you and me and a number of other people in our community were in that same spot, would we know how to overtake a government? That seems to be a big job. And will any of this distract us from the issues at home going on with the economy, voter ID, affordability, all those things? So I do have some questions today. I will ask them to Dr. Ambrosio, and I will ask them to you as well. So since there's so much to do today, let's hop to it here with the Morning Wire. These are what I believe to be the most important pieces of our day for us to discuss here on the Steve Holmstrom Show as we get started here on this Monday morning. I'm coming to you live from Watford City, North Dakota, the Drive with Vision studio on the road today, but glad to be with you here on the program. You can text me, 701-237-1590. You can email us, studio@flagfamily.com, or you can call us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line at 701-271-1100. There we go. I was thinking about the text line again for a minute there. So would love to hear from you today on all of those things. So let's get to it here with the things that you need to know to get your day started. We will start out today with our sunrise sunset. And in Fargo today, the sun will set coming up here on March 2nd at 6:14 p.m., we will gain 3 minutes and 19 seconds of daylight today. In the market today, as you might expect, a lot of uncertainty on Wall Street. Stocks opened significantly lower, but in the last 10 minutes have staged a remarkable recovery, and we are basically unchanged right now. Some small losses across the board, but we were several hundred points down on the Dow and the NASDAQ today, and we're now at Dow minus 142, S&P 500 minus 14, NASDAQ down minus 37. This is about a quarter of a percentage point as a change. So we have rallied quite a bit. Speaking of rallying, U.S. crude oil has jumped about 7% in weekend trading, $71.20 price now on a barrel of WTI crude. Basically, it's just we're getting more details about what's happening in Iran, and Iran is sabotaging some of its own infrastructure now for some unknown reason. But one of their major petroleum sites was hit hard over the weekend, and so people are expecting we're going to have a massive disruption in oil production over there, which, again, the supply demand makes things go up across the world. So that is a storyline worth watching. We'll be keeping an eye on that certainly today and tomorrow. Gold, no surprise. Gold firing up today. When things get uncertain, people buy gold, and it's up about 2 percentage points today, up $93 at $5,341. Silver down actually about $3 an ounce today, which is a bit of a surprise. And Bitcoin has jumped in the last 15 minutes. It was about 66,000 about 10 minutes ago, but something's happening in Bitcoin today, up now about $3,000 at 68,290. All right, let's get to the stories that are making headlines here on this Monday morning. Of course, there's a lot of conversation everywhere about what happened in Iran over the weekend, bringing you kind of a digest the best we can of this. And this is story of the day, so I'll have more of the headlines coming up in just a moment. But members of the Fargo-Moorhead Iranian community gathered downtown yesterday, reports Valley News Live, to share reactions and celebrate following the confirmed death of the supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. While the gathering served as a space for community support, participants were expressing a lot of different emotions, obviously concern for people back home, but definitely some celebration and hope for Iran's future. Meanwhile, the forum reports that there was a demonstration protesting what happened. Interesting. Valley News Live with the story about the celebration, the forum of the story about the kind of complaints and criticism today. And I looked through both stations' websites to see if I'm missing anything, and I don't think so. I think this was the choice of the newsrooms to highlight the gatherings that they did. I just thought that was interesting. But 40 demonstrators gathered over the weekend on the bridges connecting Fargo and Moorhead. This was organized by Indivisible Fargo Moorhead, holding signs calling for an immediate de-escalation of the conflict in the Middle East and emphasizing the need for the president to get congressional approval for these military strikes, which is not technically the law. The president's got 60 days to do strikes like this, where he's got discretion on that. But that was not what the folks on the bridges were talking about when they gathered over the weekend. More than 200 Minnesota service members have been deployed, reports the forum, to an area of the Mideast. Not exactly sure where, but it looks like there are about 200 troops that are on the way from the Minnesota National Guard. North Dakota's federal delegation, Senators Hovind and Kramer and Representative Armstrong, issued statements supporting the U.S. operation that killed Khamenei. Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk did as well. Elon Musk said on Saturday it was the highest day of usage on X, formerly known as Twitter, that the company has ever had. A little closer to home, four developers have submitted detailed proposals for the new Fargo Convention Center, targeting sites near the Fargo Dome, Shields Arena, Brewhalla, and the Fargo Civic. We've had all those groups on our program today. All of them are continuing in the process with this next step. The Fargo City Commission tonight will hear updates on the Human Rights and Native American Commissions. Both were originally facing dissolvement, I guess you could say, last month, but were granted until March to develop a transition plan to operate under new umbrellas. The forum reports that a new public safety survey has identified specific neighborhoods in Fargo where residents report feeling the most vulnerable to crime and vagrancy. The data highlights a disconnect between official police crime stats and the lived experience of residents regarding downtown safety. And Fargo-Moorhead is now home to more than 10 companies with annual revenues exceeding $1 billion. We'll talk about that as we go through the program here today as well. And we'll talk too about that Texas nightclub shooting, 2 killed, 14 wounded. Looks like a terrorist act to me. We're back with the story of the day and my 4 questions I have next.
Well, we are right now in peak travel. Get out of town and have a little fun season. And to talk about it here, our friends at Travel Travel, Katie is with us today to tell us about a great opportunity for you to do a great getaway. Good morning, Katie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. And yourself?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. But I think I would be doing even a little bit better if I were in Cancun today. The good news is you can help me and everybody else with that. Tell us about it.
I sure can. We have an amazing deal this week. So what we're going to do is March 18th to the 25th. We're going to do direct airfare from Minneapolis into Cancun. We're going to do round-trip transfers from the airport to the hotel, and we are going to stay at the Rio Cancun adults-only property for 7 nights. We're doing, and it's all-inclusive, all your meals, all your beverages, all your entertainment right there for $1,680 per person.
Wow, that's so great. $3,000, and 2 of you are on the way. And I tell you what, there's something beautiful about certainly that part of the world, but also the adults-only resorts. If you haven't been there, you don't really realize, but the moms around the pool, they don't have to worry about their kids getting in trouble or other people's kids. Like, the moms can never relax because they're always, and the dads do, but the moms are especially, they've always got the radar up. Mom can relax at the pool because there's no kids to worry about getting in trouble or drowning in the pool. So you tend to have a lot of smiles around the pool at those places. And Rio is a great hotel chain as well. Is it safe down there, Katie? I know there's been some talk about in certain parts of Mexico with the cartels. What's it like in Cancun?
Yes, business as usual in Cancun. United States government did initially come out with a warning last Sunday from stuff that was happening in Puerto Vallarta over on the Pacific side. They did recant everything on Monday for the Caribbean side. So we're back to a level 2, which says they use caution, which is always going to be there. So we're always going to do that. But definitely, it's that's down there right now and said that it's the same as normal.
Okay.
She felt safe, had no issues. So definitely, I mean, it is a personal preference, obviously. Can't control everybody everywhere, but
yeah.
It is a great place and great location. And once we include all the transfers and everything, so you are set from start to finish.
Well, and when you're at an all-inclusive resort, you generally don't need to leave. And those are the safest places to be. So another reason to feel good about that. If people want to find out more, Katie, how do they get in touch with you?
Definitely give us a call at 701-492-5000. We will also have this on our website, which is traveltravelgroup.com. Or you can swing in our office. We're located just south of West Acres on the corner of 17th and 42nd.
Okay, very good. Thanks so much, Katie. Great idea. And I hope you get a lot of people take advantage of that one. You take care.
Thanks, you too.
All right, thanks, Katie. Okay, story of the day. Iran gets lit up like the 4th of July, cue the late, great Toby Keith. But troops have been killed. The president says there may be more. 48 leaders are now dead that were part of the Iranian regime, but 4 U.S. heroes are dead and several others are badly injured as well. Many are asking, are we now in a war? Pete Hegseth, in a press conference this morning that just finished up a short time ago, says we are not in a war.
To the media outlets and political left screaming endless wars, stop. This is not Iraq. This is not endless. I was there for both. Our generation knows better, and so does this president. He called the last 20 years of nation-building wars dumb, and he's right. This is the opposite. This operation is a clear, devastating, decisive mission. Destroy the missile threat, destroy the Navy, no nukes. Israel has clear missions as well, for which we are grateful. Capable partners, as we've said since the beginning, capable partners are good partners.
Okay, so Pete Hegseth saying, don't tell me here's another Iraq and that we're going to take care of what we need to. We're not going to tell you exactly how long it's going to take. We're hoping to get this done as soon as possible.
Here are my takeaways from what I heard this morning. This is the kind of press conference that will deter an awful lot in the days ahead. I don't know if President Trump is liked, loved, respected around the world. I have my own beliefs on that. But there's no question this president is feared around the world. And when you come out and do what he has done, and when you have people talking like Pete Hegseth and Dan Kane, General Kane, we're talking this morning, it's like you just remind the world you don't mess with the U.S. And this is what we've been sorely lacking in the Democrat presidents we've had over the last 20 years. There's been so much of this appeasement and apologizing and very little American excellence, American exceptionalism. And boy, are we getting that in spades here. Can you have imagined the Biden administration even doing anything that sounded like that or anything that required this level of coordination? What would that press conference have sounded like? We'd have heard about every, you know, whatever, group of LGBTs and DEIs and everything else. We wouldn't even talked about the military. We probably wouldn't have even been here. News came in the press conference that the go order came Friday afternoon around 4, that they had intel they could take out Khomeini in a large group setting with other leaders. More troops are on the way today, said Dan Kane. Hegseth said to the troops, don't listen to the noise. Stay focused on the job and what we're trying to do with the mission. He said Iran was stalling in negotiations to build nuclear capability, and we knew that they were rebuilding quickly. He said this is not a war of choice. This is America first. Iran's been attacking us in front of the scenes and behind the scenes since 1979. The objectives, he said, are to destroy Iran's offensive capabilities, the Navy and the drones, and the nuclear bomb capabilities. He said the three that died initially were from an incoming missile that hit a command center that got through the defense weaponry. It was Iranian missiles that got through. He said there are no U.S. boots on the ground right now, but we're willing to do that if we need to. Hegseth said we are not going to speak publicly about what we will or won't do when asked, will you have boots on the ground? He said, that's just nothing we should be talking about. And by the way, he's 100% right on that. I think at times like this, they should be saying very, very little. They maybe wouldn't even need to say as much as they're saying now, although I'm sure they vetted what they're saying and are giving the information that's needed. And I do appreciate them saying, here's how our people died. I do think we want to hear that as a country. Hegseth also said something that I thought was really interesting at the end of his press conference. He said he, his family, and the cabinet is praying continually for godly wisdom about what to do. I thought that was just a nice slice of, I don't know if humility is the right word, but just, hey, you know, we're trying to do the best we can. We're asking God to give us some guidance on that. A couple other notes came out just after the press conference. It was reported earlier today that initially the UK did not want to let U.S. planes gas up at their bases or be stationed there. But after Iran indiscriminately started bombing nearby on Saturday, countries that had nothing to do with this, they changed their mind. Now, why would the UK not cooperate with us at the beginning? This is very interesting to me. Democrats are generally saying out loud that they're fine with the attack, but now what comes next? The president hasn't briefed Congress about that, nor should he. I don't think the president should be discussing strategy with Congress. We have some loose lips that can sink those ships, no question about that. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with one of the best guests that we have at times like this, Dr. Thomas Ambrosio, political science professor at NDSU. He'll join us to answer some of the key questions that I have, including, why are our allies so slow to cooperate with us on this? That's next on the Steve Holcim Show. North Dakota's future depends on the choices we make today, and Americans for Prosperity North Dakota is proud to unveil their 2027 policy agenda, the North Dakota Road to Opportunity. They're pushing for the total elimination of the state income tax and expanded property tax relief. They're also calling for a North Dakota RAINS Act to rein in government overreach and fighting for education savings accounts for every student so that they can empower parents. View the full plan and find out how to get involved at afpnd.org. That's afpnd.org. Please be joined now on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line by Dr. Thomas Ambrosio, professor of international politics, international studies at North Dakota State University, and one of the really great regional voices we have when we need perspective on what is happening overseas. Dr. Ambrosio, thank you so much for your time. Good morning, sir.
Thanks for having me. Lots going on.
Oh, man, no kidding. Yeah, and I'm so thankful for your time. I know that Mondays are normally a very busy day anyway, so thank you for doing this. I'm going to start with a question, just a big picture question for you. As you've watched what's happened over the weekend, as you maybe listened to the press conference from the Department of War this morning, is there anything where you say, wow, this is interesting. This is not something I knew or something I expected or something that I would have foreseen to have happened. But what stands out to you as far as something that you go, huh, that's really interesting? Anything pop to mind for you?
Well, when I saw the news on Saturday morning, I was actually not surprised. I was like, oh, so this is actually happening now. I think that what's really surprised me thus far is how much Iran has sought to regionalize this war. They have shot missiles now and drones at pretty much everyone in the Gulf, and including, I saw something about Cyprus as well, which is, you know, on the other side of the Middle East. So it seems like the Iranians are just kind of going kind of full bore now, and even shooting at Oman, which was the negotiator. Which has had a pretty decent relationship with Iran. So it's kind of this, the Iranians are clearly realizing that this is an existential conflict. And I'm not sure exactly what their plan is at this point. Maybe they're hoping for some kind of regional uprising from below, which I don't think is going to happen. So that's the first thing that kind of surprised me. The second thing is just how much this decapitation strike was successful. We have, you know, a lot of upward mobility, we'll say, in the Iranian government because the top levels keep getting killed. Of course, the big one is the Ayatollah, who was killed in a targeted strike in the very first, you know, minutes of this conflict. So, which I, at some level, we had been kind of planning for this, it seemed like. But also that was shocking, not just that it was successful, but the fact that we actually did it. It seems like the Israelis are more handling the targeted killing part. We're handling much more of the larger military capacity of the Iranian government. But the fact that we're going down this road, I mean, this is a red line at this point that we have crossed. And it's not necessarily a good or bad thing, but it basically completely changes the dynamics. Now, who are we going to negotiate with? Now, hopefully someone who does not want to die, who happens to come up next. But the fact that we're willing to do this shows the level of serious that this is not just a small operation, you know, kind of hit and then get out. But this is we realize that this is now a full bore war.
And don't you think this really signals that the U.S. is done negotiating? Like, you can't negotiate with these people because they're not going to negotiate in good faith. They lie at every turn. They say they're going to do one thing. They don't do what they say they're going to do. They say they want to negotiate, and they delay while they rebuild. This might just be President Trump saying, okay, there's going to be no more negotiating.
Well, I mean, all act of war in some ways is a negotiation. It's just negotiating through force. I think that if we were to get someone to come up, we would like to see full regime change. We'd like to see that. And that still may happen. Right now, we're saying to the people, stay indoors, and then we'll kind of signal when they go out on the street. But we may have a situation where we have some military commander who ultimately is the one who takes over, someone from the regular military, not from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. And then we negotiate with him to try to stabilize the situation. And because ultimately our, you know, our objectives are less regime change than, as someone had said, regime adjustment. That's not my phrase, someone else's. That we want to see certain behaviors change. And if we can't get that, well, then we want the full regime change. But ultimately, we really want the adjustment. So we can find someone to negotiate with. It may not be anyone in the current regime. One thing we have to understand when we're looking at the situation in Iran is that there's kind of two parallel structures. One is the ideological kind of religious fanatical structure, which is from the former Ayatollah and whoever's successor is going to be, all the way down through the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. And then you also have the standard military, which has been kind of infiltrated by the Revolutionary Guard Corps, but can be somewhat separate. So if we had a temporary strongman who would come in, then we could probably negotiate with them. We'll see. Again, we're, 60 hours into this? One thing for everyone to keep in mind is that we like everything done quickly, and we kind of have this, you know, everything's now mentality. But the war against Serbia in 1999 lasted like 78 days. You know, we are not even 72 hours into this.
Yeah.
So a lot can change. A lot can evolve here. So we'll have to see how things develop. At a certain point, we may be like, we've hit everything we're going to hit. Now we need the people to go out on the street. And ultimately, it's going to be regimes don't fall through popular uprisings. They fall because of splits within the security forces in almost every case. So we're really going to need the regular military to step in. That being said, there's one more other point. The problem is you have these two completely parallel military structures, and that could result in a civil war where the military tries to step in, and then the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, resists. And they're willing to go down with the ship because they're religious fanatics.
So, makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've got kind of two big questions for you, and I'll start with the order of importance for me. Do the Iranian people, who the president called out, said, this is your time, take back your country. Well, that sounds good, but do the Iranian people have the ability to come together to create some kind of governing alternative, or will the establishment, we know that they've got a deep bench over there, even though we took out 48 of their key leaders, is there enough establishment left to recover and keep the status quo?
There probably is. That's why you're going to need the regular military to be the ones to ultimately step in to overthrow the regime. So a lot of times, you know, not to get kind of too far in the weeds with kind of revolution theory, and I obviously don't want to get there, but the reality is that what happens is the people on the streets, they signal to people within the regime, including in the security forces and the military, to say, hey, this government is illegitimate. You need to break with the government. You need to break with the regime. And that's what kind of usually causes the downfall. So the people going on the streets themselves may not be able to do it, but they will signal to, again, those who are kind of softliners, either in the regime, which is going to be very few, or in like the police or in the regular military, to then break with the regime and to defect from the regime and side with the people. So the people do play a key role in this, but they cannot do it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Second question I have for you, the reports are that UK now is allowing U.S. aircraft to be at their bases, but they were initially reluctant to do that. Why do we have to do these things ourselves in cases like this? If it benefits the entire free world, why must it always be the U.S. doing things, and why have our European allies, why were they reluctant to get involved at the front end of this?
Oh, boy. To prevent myself going on a rant, I'll just say this. First of all, I would say allies in quotes when it comes to European allies. Kinda-ish, you know. Also, they've got domestic problems. The British have a huge Islamic population, which is really not into this whole idea, and they have to worry about that. And also, the Labour Party is in a precarious situation. Given the recent by-elections that just happened, where you have kind of far left aligning themselves with Islamists. So they've got domestic problems, as well as, you know, the French have similar situation going on there.
Right.
And also the Europeans, you know, they are not capable, physically or even, morally in terms of like the idea of like we are going to defend Western civilization. We're going to defend ourselves. They just simply can't. So, I mean, they talk the big game about, oh, we'll support Ukraine. But ultimately, everyone's talking about U.S. security guarantees. I know I don't want to shift to Ukraine, but it is kind of connected. The Europeans are kind of a spec force. So the fact that they're kind of wishy-washy on this, I'm not surprised. I mean, they're wishy-washy kind of defending themselves and defending their own continent. So the situation, that's a problem they don't want because they really can't handle it. So, again, that may sound harsh. But when we're talking about allies, you know, the things are a little bit rocky. So that's why the United States has to handle things themselves, because there really is no one out there except for Israel and except for maybe a handful of other countries that actually are willing to step up. And that's not all Europeans. I mean, you talk about a country like Poland, like they would step up. They have limited resources and they got, you know, Russia on their border there. But for the most part, we're talking about countries like Great Britain, France, Germany. What are they going to do? And now the British are allowing us to kind of use bases, but it's very, very limited, too. It's like only for certain types of defensive measures, all of which seemingly have to be pre-approved from London. So, I mean, it's like we're here, but like we're friends.
We're not
like,
here. Dr. Ambrosio, thank you so much. Short on time, but really great stuff. You gave us the most important answers today. Thank you so much for your time. Back after this on the Steve Hallstrom Show. If you are a veteran, I have to believe that your emotions are high over the weekend and this morning as well. And I would not try to put myself in the position of anyone who was, but I've got to think there's a part of you, if you are a veteran, that listened to Pete Hegseth this morning and General Dan Kane, they call him Raisin Kane, and you were proud at the force, the might, the strength, the decisiveness. There is no, well, God, maybe, I don't know. There's none of that. It is full speed ahead. It's let's get this job done. It's going to be tough, but we're going to do it. To me, this is the military I grew up with. If you're a veteran, I wonder what your emotions are this morning. You see that four of our warriors are now dead, and that's got to hurt too. But you see the overall success of the operation. You see what an evil force Iran has been on the world stage and how much they hate America, and that's got to make you proud. So question, are you glad that we did what we did? As you take a look at all of that today, I'd love to hear from you if you are a veteran. And Addison, do we still have Mike on the line? I know that he was there a couple minutes ago. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, good morning, Steve. And yeah, to let you know, I mean, I'm a veteran. I'm a combat veteran. I served from 1979 to 2001. Hmm. And the thing about what we did right here is spot on. Trump did exactly what he needed to do. In fact, it should have been done years ago. But just give you a little heads up. I mean, we had Vietnam. That was a 11-year conflict, no war declared, and it was run by Congress. And I'm not going to say it was an epic failure, but it was a failure. And then we had Desert Storm, which I am very proud of the troops that in Desert Storm. We had Stormin Norman, and we went in, and in 5 days we were 5 miles from Baghdad, and Congress told us to stop. And 11 years later, we had the Twin Towers go down, or 10 years later, we had the Twin Towers go down, and we were back over there. I want Trump and Hegseth to stay on this, run it, and keep Congress out of it, because there's nobody that's going to mess it up worse than our Democrats in Congress.
Hmm. Mike, when I hear you say that, I can hear the pride in your voice, and thank you, sir, for your service, too. But when you talk about, you know, don't get Congress involved, that's what the Democrats are pounding the table for right now. Like, he needs to run all this by us. And I can't think of a worse idea, because we know how much they hate him. And we've already seen with some of the tax stuff going on, they will hurt the American people. And this is not exaggerated. They will hurt the American people if it means Donald Trump looks bad. And I'm scared to think of what that might mean militarily.
Well, Congress is not only going to hurt the American people, they're going to hurt the troops. I mean, we lost more troops in Vietnam that were senseless because Congress had their hands tied. When we went into Baghdad, we went in full bore, and it was shock and awe. And when we got 5 miles from Baghdad, Congress told us to stop. Not the General Swerkoff, but Congress told us we had to stop. And then we were back in 10 years. Let Pete Hegseth take this, and let the president take this, and it'll be done in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Mike, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate it very much. And thanks for your service and for calling and adding that needed perspective. Thank you for doing that. That opens up a phone line for you, 701-271-1100. I got an email here a moment ago from Dan. Dan said, Steve, I fully support what we're doing to Iran. We're 20 years too late. Iran was responsible for the insurgency we had to fight in Iraq and the technology used in many IEDs, which were quite far from improvised. The concave copper disc that explosive turned into molten projectiles that easily penetrated armor and killed U.S. servicemen was produced and carried into Iraq by Iran. Iran was also equipping insurgents in Afghanistan with the same IED technology. Iranian operatives were crawling all over western Afghanistan, which shares a border with Iran. Iran equipped insurgents operating out of Pakistan as well, assuring Afghanistan was sandwiched between two nations funding terrorism and insurgencies. And Dan gives me a lot more here in this email than I have time for, but appreciate that. Okay, so two veterans are saying absolutely, and I think both said exactly the same thing, right? We're 20 years too late. What do you think if you have served, or even if you just want to say, hey, I'm a proud American today, and here's what I want to say about this, would be glad to hear from you as well. I said this earlier in the program, and I'll say it again. The president, I don't know if he's liked or respected worldwide, but he is feared. There's no question about that. We've known that. Just look at how they act when he goes overseas. And this will certainly solidify that. And to be honest with you, if I had to pick one of the three, I'd rather them be feared than liked or respected. We had Presidents Obama and President Biden who wanted to be liked. It mattered to them. President Trump doesn't care if you like him. He probably doesn't even care if you respect him, but he's going to make darn sure that you fear him. And we're seeing the same thing being carried out by Pete Hegseth. And that is such an important message to send out. Do not mess with the U.S. If you do, you will die. And when you say it or when you don't say it, people land on that. And the point is made very clear. More of your calls and comments on this coming up in hour number two. The key three coming up next. We will have quite a bit of time here in the second hour of the program for your calls, your conversations. I want to hear from you today. Your comments on what you've seen over the weekend. What is the question maybe that's unanswered for you? What is the thing that sticks in your gut about this? What is the thing that makes you pump your fist? I'd love to hear from you today, 701-271-1100. If you are a veteran, you go to the front of the line because I really want to hear from you. You've lost four comrades, I guess you could say, or four colleagues. I guess we're not in Russia here. four people that served like you did, and that is obviously a sad thing. Any loss of life is horrific, as is any loss of life in Iran or over in Israel, anywhere. But when it's our own who sign up to serve our country, it hits us a little harder. At the same time, you cannot argue about the success of the operation. Overall, this has been a well-crafted and well-executed operation. And after the Midnight Hammer in Venezuela, we do what we've done in Iran and have been extraordinarily effective in doing what it is that we're trying to do, with a relatively small loss of life. In an adult world, you're going to have loss of life, no question about it. So I've got to think that there's a lot of emotions maybe running through your mind if you were a veteran today, if you served, especially in combat. We'd love to hear from you today, 701
877-271-1100. Our best thing I heard all day, by the way, I think is something that whether you are a veteran or just a proud American who has not served, I think you're going to love this. It is a collage that is some of the reaction of Iranian Americans who are absolutely delirious with joy that the Ayatollah is gone, and they are desperate to have a change of regime over there. And they're, I mean, listening to them, it could not help but bring you to tears when you listen to them. We're going to play some of that for you here coming up in just a few minutes. When I am in Watford City, I like to stay at Teddy's Presidential Suites. Their Teddy's Lounge is a ton of fun. It's open to the public Monday through Saturday, 4 to 10, not just for hotel guests. If you're a local out here in KTGO country, I'm in Watford City today, come on down and enjoy dinner, drinks. The food's fantastic, a great selection of tap drinks as well. And I have stayed now in probably every room they have there. I've stayed from the smallest room, which is not all that small, to the King Luxury Suites, and every one of them is fantastic. If it's in New York City, these would be $1,000 a night rooms. They are fantastic. Stayed in a deluxe room last night, a ton of room, and I stayed in a suite when I was here last week. They take great care of you at Teddy's and Little Missouri and in suites as well. Great places to stay. The only place that I stay when I come to Watford City. So look them up when you're heading this way. All right, it's time for the key three, and I'm going to move quickly through this because I want to leave as much time as possible for reactions from you today. So let's boogie through the key three. These are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. I cannot help but start with a fourth American troop now, a serviceman, servicewoman, has been killed in the attack on Iran. And we had three deaths that were confirmed yesterday, one more overnight. We do not know the setting of the fourth person that was killed. I don't think Secretary of War Hegseth talked specifically about that, but the first three were at a military operations base over there, and they were hit by an incoming missile that got through the defense system, got through the counter artillery, and hit that fortified operations center, and three people were dead. The fourth, we don't have that confirmation, but may very well be linked to that. So our hearts are heavy. We pray for the families, and again, we say thank you to the troops. Story number two, this one I haven't talked about yet, and I need to, but a photo has emerged of the gunman who police say killed two people and wounded 14 at a bar in Austin, Texas. The gunman who was shot and killed by police was wearing a sweatshirt that said "Property of Allah" during the attack, with a T-shirt underneath with the Iranian flag. Officials say they cannot be sure as to what the motive might be. I guess that's possible. I think we have a pretty good hint, though, don't you? He was a U.S. citizen. He wasn't an illegal. Important to note that. We won't have our facts straight. But he was born in Senegal, and he became a U.S. citizen somewhere along the way. And somewhere along the way, obviously, got radicalized as well. And story number three, roughly two-thirds of survey takers, reports the forum this morning, who say they feel unsafe in a part of Fargo named downtown as the most unsafe area in the city. There were 499 respondents that were part of this survey, and 64% said there's a place in Fargo they feel unsafe. And of that, about 65% referred to the downtown Broadway area or locations in the downtown area. Interesting. The results sort of jive with what Dave Zabolski has said, that there's a lot of fear in downtown. He has said that downtown is relatively safe, but the people of Fargo, at least 500 of them, say that two-thirds of them say there's a place in Fargo they feel unsafe, and two-thirds of them say it's downtown. And that's a look at what I believe to be three of the most important stories. I'll say the most important stories, but let's get to the phone lines here. We're going to start with Larry in Grand Forks. Larry, good morning. What needs to be said right now, do you think?
Well, good morning. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I was very glad to see that Trump finally pulled the trigger on this. The old saying, blanker, get off the pot. I was tired of hearing talked all the time about Khomeini, how they want peace, and he kept saying this, that, come on, let's go. Let's do something. We can't go on forever like this, you know. So I was really glad that he pulled the trigger finally.
Larry, thank you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for calling me today to let me know how you feel about this. It's so important to hear from our veterans on days like this, because I'm seeing, as you probably can expect, Larry, there are social media messages all over, and some are from people who have served that are saying this is the worst thing. Trump is making a horrible mistake. He's just out trying to grab power, and he's on an ego trip. But, Larry, I think I'm hearing you say you don't see it that way at all. He's doing what should have been done 20 years ago.
Yeah, and it should have been, to me, it should have been carried on over from when they went and bombed the nuclear sites last year. Mm-hmm. I think we should have just done it then,
okay.
You know, already then. Because I just think that we've listened too long to Khomeini, and I think they were like kind of, I don't know, I know Trump's a smart guy, but I always had the opinion that the Iranians were kind of using Trump and just dragging him along and giving them more time to get ready for things or whatever, you know.
Larry, thank you. Yeah, thank you for calling, Larry. I appreciate that. I'll let you go here. That opens up a phone line for you, 701-271-1100. I am really glad to hear this perspective. I have to admit to you that I think maybe because it's been so long where we've allowed it to go on, I think people like me have been, if you're not following this stuff all the time, you think, okay, maybe there's not that much danger there. And you sort of get lulled into a false sense of security maybe by just not being woke up to the fact that look how bad these people are. I think you know that in your head, but when nobody really does anything about that, if we don't perceive there's a direct threat here that could explode at any time, and you just kind of allow this to keep going, I think people that don't follow this stuff as closely say, okay, well, maybe things are manageable over there. And clearly, the president now saying that that's not the case. Let's go back to the phone lines. Kevin is on the line from Fergus Falls. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for the show again today. I agree with all the vets calling in, totally 100%. But like I told Addison, I said, I could already, before, right when I heard, I go, oh, God, the Democrats are going to start screaming. We're rushing back to Congress and Senate and try to stop Trump. I believe he has every right to do this. My biggest hope is that he finishes this well. We get out of there as soon as we can. But I'm really hoping for the Iranian people that just want to get back to something normal. We sit here safe in Minnesota and North Dakota going, oh, that's way over there, and be couch potato caller inners and stuff and give our little opinions. But you know what? But these people have been under this. Oh my God! I was so hoping. I go, oh, Trump did hear their voice. He did finally get there, and he's giving them a chance. And I hope before God that they get their chance and take their country back. These are good people.
That's what I've heard too. Everybody says that the Iranian people don't want this. Isn't it crazy how you can have a government that just keeps on going against the wishes of the people? And I'm sure there are some that are loyal to the regime, too. That's just the complexity of the world. More of your calls when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Mission Ford Lincoln and Wahpeton, home of the 15-minute car buying experience. Cars, trucks, SUVs, new, pre-owned, they've got them down there. If you like working on cars, you can make really good money, more than the techs anywhere in the 5-state area. No joke. And no weekends. No evenings, full benefits. It's a great deal. Go to drivewithvision.com to find out more. Drivewithvision.com. All right, we have a whole lot of stuff that we would typically do between now and the top of the hour. I'm blowing out just about everything else other than best thing I heard all day. And thanks to those of you who have called or emailed or texted to say, I love best thing I heard all day. Got a email from a listener, Jenny, who said it's now her favorite part of the show. I appreciate that very much. There's so much interesting commentary out there, and so many things make me say, yes, that was so good. Could have never said it that way myself. And certainly that's true with today's clip of the day. I have got two of them actually for you today, so I'm going to break my own rules a little bit. The Larry Elder Show, his staffers went on the streets in Los Angeles over the weekend and got some reaction from people that were celebrating the overthrow of the regime. And this is a voice that some in major media and many on the left do not want you to hear. They are thanking President Trump after the military strikes took out the Iran supreme leader over the weekend. It was the best thing I heard all day.
Love you, Trump. You can't imagine how we are appreciate our country, our people. I'm really appreciate. We love you.
Thank you, Mr. President Trump. God bless you. God bless America. Thank you, Mr. President. Dear Mr. President Trump.
Trump, kill Khamenei. I'm so happy. Thanks, Trump. Thanks, Trump. You are the best man in the world. I love you, Trump.
I want to have a big thanks to President Trump for keeping his promise and freeing people of Iran that has nothing to do with this government, with this terrorist government.
Isn't that something? Those are voices that need to be heard today. Now, in the end, we have to do what's best for the United States. Get that. But when we can do something that's very, very good at minimum for the United States, and you can do that for other people, who else would do it? Who else could do it? And I just, that made my heart jump a little bit. A close second on best thing I heard all day, CBS News continues its, I'll call it, reconstruction project with a healthy dose of the truth. And this was the second best thing I heard all day.
The Iranian people, what are you hearing from them tonight? We know they're celebrating. What's the feeling?
It's an incredible dissonance that they had to choose war over a regime, but they were willing to do it. Thank you, Donald Trump. Thank you, Benjamin Netanyahu. Thank you, America. It's not death to America after they killed the leader. The Americans and the Israelis did it. It's not death to Israel and death to America. It's thank you. It's a new day dawning, but very early days. Very, very early days. So we'll have to see what comes. But it's the Iranian people that have been telling me over and over and over again, we want this. Hmm. We're not regimists. We're not Islamic. I don't even say, oh, my God, to my Iranian friends because they don't want God to be any part of this.
Hmm. So this is someone who is a member of a governmental authority that is from Iran, but also is speaking with American media about this as someone who is kind of tied into it. And so I thought those were just a couple. And CBS News, again, continuing, I think, to do some really good things, trying to regain the trust of the American people in their news reporting. They've got a long way to go, but they're taking some big steps early on. And this was Tony DeCoppel last night on CBS Evening News, talking about these strikes on Iran. These are very encouraging things to hear, and I think it sort of reinforces a lot of things that we've been thinking about and talking about here. A couple of thoughts before we open up phone lines for the rest of the show here. It's a good thing our president works 20-hour days, because this is what the job calls for. I think for a while when Joe Biden was president, we knew that he was failing, and then probably the last 2 years of his term, we just knew that he had failed, and not failing in like not doing the job, but I guess that's true. But he wasn't a capable adult anymore. He wasn't a capable leader. He could not execute the job. He didn't have the energy. He didn't have the stamina. He did not have the mental wherewithal. I'm not besmirching his character. Many of us are going to reach that point, sadly, in our life too, but he had gotten there. And if Donald Trump can do this in 3 to 4 weeks, which is what he has told people, I think it could be done in 3 to 4 weeks, it will be a massive win, even if we lose some troops. I will be honest with you that I've always struggled with how much do we get involved in overseas conflicts, and how much do we just put up the moat, put up the wall around our country, and do our country right, and just let the rest of the world fend for themselves. Two things can be true at the same time, though, that you need to take care of yourself first, but when you have a government like this that has done what it has done, they keep saying, hey, we're going to kill you, America. It's just a matter of time. You've got to make sure that they don't. And that certainly helps the international conglomerate of countries as well, and free countries. But I think back to what we heard from Dr. Ambrosio earlier in the program, and he was saying that we got really squishy allies over there, and they're not capable. Think about that if you're a European country. You have basically allowed yourself to be neutered to the point that you can't do anything because you can't, you don't have the resource, you don't have the power, you don't have the strength, and you're not investing in any of that because you've got too many people of Muslim descent in your country who don't want that. I mean, it's a battle. It's a dearth of resources, as well as, well, I don't know, a lot of our people now don't want this. Pretty amazing stuff. So this is going to be a massive story, hopefully not for too long. Let's go back to the phone lines. Dana is on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hi, Dana.
Good morning, my friend Steve and everybody else. Hey, look what's happening here, people. For 46 years, we've been dealing with this. And then Trump comes in, and within a week or two, or probably a couple months since he first said he was going to help, look what's happening. Khomeini's dead. The people are rejoicing. They've been killing him off by the thousands. And don't get Congress involved, because as you just heard these vets call it and say, all they do is say, go get them, boys. And when they just about got the job done, stand down. We're going to argue about this and leak out vital information and just stall away another 46 years.
Yeah.
So keep them out of it. And to our allies in Europe, they're so used to using us to take care of all this. And, you know, at least they could do is back us with their, you know, intentions, because they don't have the power to help militarily.
Yes.
So I'm so proud of him. He makes me proud to be an American. Thank you, Trump.
Can hear the emotion in your voice today, Dana. Thank you, my friend, for giving a call in. Yeah, great, good stuff there. And I would say again, I'll keep saying this because I think it needs to be, I think we need to be reminded of this. When the Democrats in Congress said they would not pass the Tax Cuts and Job Act extension in the last tax bill, it showed you that they will hurt the American people just so they can hurt Donald Trump. They don't care as long as it makes Donald Trump look bad. So do any of us think that they wouldn't sell out the president if Congress was completely briefed on this? I don't. Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, do you trust them? I don't. All right, your calls the rest of the show coming up. Late, great Toby Keith, man. Those words are ringing true again with one of the greatest songs that has ever been written and so appropriate on days like today. Thank you, Addison, for that. 701-271-1100. The rest of the hour belongs to you. Would like to hear your comments, your thoughts on this, your questions. Is there a question out there that's kind of just ringing around in your head? And what's going to happen? The biggest question for me is, can the Iranian people do this? The president has challenged them. Step up. Take back your country. This might be your only shot. You know what? He's right. But can they? Is that something that can be done? We need William Wallace, right, sitting on a horse somewhere to try to figure out how to do this. But that's my biggest question. Can they do it? And will they do it? Your biggest question, your biggest thought, your biggest comment, would love to hear from you today, 701-271-1100. Let's go back to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. John in Fargo. John, good morning.
That's why I always keep a tube of boot grease in my backpack.
Okay. For the Toby Keith song or what?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
For the pro-Palestine Subaru driving crowd with their whistles and their teaser. Yeah. No, I'll tell you, you know, the only thing that annoys me, Steve, you know, about when we talk about regime change, and we saw this in Cuba a few years back, you know, when Sleepy Joe was in office and couldn't get off his keister to help him. And frankly, I still don't think we've done enough for Ukraine. You know, however, yes, we have sent money, but I don't always agree with the monetary aspect of it versus just load up a bunch of damn crates and airdrop them small arms and munitions. I mean, how are the people of Iran going to take back their country from a corrupted regime and a corrupted military, you know, that was marching in lockstep with that regime, when they have no way to take those people out? That's what always disturbs me about these, you know, because I mean, you know, even in Afghanistan, you know, before we pulled out, we never really got the Afghani freedom fighters on board enough, you know, that all that happened was we left, they threw down all the, you know, their arms and ran away to the, you know, to the shadows. And we never saw that in World War II. I mean, we dropped small arms, you know, literally by the truckload over Europe at times. You know, we made things like the, for those of you who don't always follow history, look up the Liberator handgun that was built in World War II. And it was basically made of stamped sheet metal. It was a .45 caliber. And the instructions that came with it that were written in several languages said, do not rely on this as, you know, basically as a perfect small arm.
Yeah.
What you need to do is use this to execute the first German soldier you can and take his armaments and start to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this in a lot of these countries where there are enough of these people. You know, I think Cuba could have been taken back several years ago if Joe Biden had just basically set a bunch of crates of AR-15s by the gates of Guantanamo Bay and said, hey, come and get them. We're not going to fight your battle, but you come and get them. Now, that's sovereign U.S. territory. If the Cuban forces had attempted to breach our territory, of course, then, you know, it's game on from our standpoint. Then we can get involved.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand why some of these surrounding countries, you know, around Iran, you know, the same thing. Why are we not doing the same thing?
Yeah.
That's just my two cents.
Yeah. No, I love it, John. There's a lot of good stuff there. And it's just amazing to be going back to Dr. Ambrosio's comments about this in the first hour of the show. It's how is the international community this dysfunctional? Like, how can we not come together and say we all agree on the same thing, which we all do, you'd think, and how do we not find a way to get together and do this? I love that the U.S. is able and willing to do what it needs to do, but gosh, it would say a lot more if we had our European allies in there with us saying, yeah, this is enough.
Well, even our Middle Eastern allies.
Even in the Middle East. Exactly. Yeah. Well, we got Israel, and all this definitely works out to their advantage as well. John, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it very much. I'm going to scoot along here. Robert is next up. That opens up a line for you, 701-271-1100. What's going through your mind about all this stuff in Iran this morning? Robert, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Well, first of all, I'm not a real history major on the connection between the United States and the Middle East. But, you know, from what I've heard regarding, you know, I read an article last night about, it was about voting. It was about the mid-elections. And it's like, people are going to forget, if this doesn't go perfect with no loss of lives, people are going to, they're going to be mad at Trump, so they're going to vote against him. If it goes perfect, it'll be forgotten within a month or two. So what's the purpose of it? Well, this again is another thing about Trump is he's for the American people. He's not looking at directly how can this benefit me? How can this benefit? I mean, you got to be strategic about the midterms, about voting, most certainly, but not to go to this length to do something. So he's doing it for the long term. And that's what Trump always does. He's always looking long term. And my thought is, you know, with not having a big knowledge of the Middle East, isn't a big reason for this that they don't talk about a whole lot is like Iran is always doing stuff under the table with China, with Russia, you know, with Venezuela, used to be. So isn't a big part of this to weaken them? They got the, what's that strait called? That all the ships go straight to
Hormuz.
I'm not even sure what it is. Yes. You know, they have such power over that. Isn't this to weaken so that when we do sanctions, Iran isn't giving oil to China under the table?
Yep.
They're not other countries. Isn't this a big part of that to weaken for long term? Trump is always long term. That's he plays long game. That's what China does. China always put we always play the short game right away. Results right away.
Because our politicians are worried about getting elected again the next time.
That's
100% with you. Yeah, and you're right. Thank you, Robert. I'll let you go just in the interest of time and the other calls coming in. But thank you very much. Good comments.
You
and
bet.
I love it when people say, look, I'm not a history buff. I'm not an expert on foreign. Good. I don't want you to be. I just want you to tell me what's in your gut and in your heart about this. I don't want a bunch of experts. I just want you as a proud American to say, here's what's going, or here's what I like. Here's what makes me nervous about this. Here's where I think Trump's right. Here's where I think the international community might be wrong on this whole thing. I just want your gut feel on this and your questions, because I got them too. But you talked about, Robert, the midterms, and I have kind of given up on saying, well, you know, Trump has got to do this for the midterms. Trump's not on the ballot. I mean, I get it, he is, and that can create some in excitement, but really it's going to be the candidates out there that are going to win or lose those races. You're not going to vote for, you know, a congresswoman in southern part of Iowa based on what Donald Trump did. That's going to be a race that he or she has to win on their own. Now, what the president does can help that, I get it, but you can't overcome a bad candidate. So you might as well do the right thing for the country. And I think you have to just say, what are my principles? What am I going to stand on? You have to act on that. And that's the Trump playbook, is tariffs. No politician would have ever done that, because there might have been a short-term pain. And there was maybe a little bit, not nearly what they thought, but it certainly opened up the potential for that. But now you've got this. And is this something a politician would have done? Maybe not. But boy, you look at the reaction from around the world on this morning and over the weekend, and like I played for you a few minutes ago, there is an unbridled joy. People in tears, they're so happy about this. And that's not, those people in, you know, wherever across the world are not going to, there's video in of people in Israel, people in Iran, you know, linking arms with, you know, Jews and Muslims, all like, yes, this is a great thing. Those people aren't voting in the U.S. elections. I imagine that could help mobilize a few people, Iranian Americans, but is that going to be enough to really change things? I don't know. But Trump is doing what he thinks needs to be done. And one thing I continue to hear over and over is this needed to be done. It was 20 years in the making, and somebody finally got around to doing it. 701-271-1100, if you want to weigh in on this today. Your questions, your concerns, what do you like? Love hearing about this. And the biggest question for me is, can the Iranian people do this now? Can they take back their country? I saw Britt Hume put up a social media post earlier today that I thought was interesting. He says, I find it puzzling that critics harp on the question of whether there was a, quote, imminent threat from Iran. I get that such a threat is legal justification for action without congressional approval. But the question suggests that threats should be allowed to become highly advanced before they can be addressed. So, Brett Hume. And Brett is right of center for sure, but he's not hard MAGA. But he's coming out today and he's saying, like, look, I'm just telling you what I see here. And that is, we've got to get to these things now before they become highly advanced. And shoot, you know, what's that line, right? Do you wait until they have their finger on the button, ready to push the button and send the bombs out? I don't think that's the right answer either. So I'm watching, I'm learning, I'm taking in all of your calls and comments on this. We'll continue it when we come back. Paul from Castleton wants to weigh in, and we'll do that next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln. Great jobs available in sales and service. Check that out at drivewithvision.com. Let's go back to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone lines. Paul in Castleton, I've been asking, hey, just dump your bucket today. What's on your mind? What's on your heart related to what happened in Iran over the weekend? Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Good morning. I first want to say that I feel really bad for the surgeons we've lost already. I'm a fellow vet, and I just want to put that out first.
Yeah.
And then the second thing, I love your new programming. Okay. So I am very, very pleased what Donald Trump has did, or President Trump has did. It should have been done a long time ago. But I want people to really think about what could have happened if they would have got their hands on or built that nuclear weapon. They would have did as best they could to get that thing launched to hit stateside, and that it would be millions of people lost. So, again, I support it 100%. I sure wish some of the other presidents had the right stuff to do it, but Donald Trump, as usual, steps up, and he takes care of America. He loves us, and you know, I couldn't say any more good things. I mean, it's all there, man. It's a good thing. So,
yeah.
But really, people think about what could have happened, you know, and he's got to keep going forward because I worked in some of the plotting of nuclear bombs back when I was in the service.
Oh, wow.
And it's not a pretty sight.
No, I'm sure it isn't.
It's not. And I did some work out in the Marshall Islands out there where we did a lot of the nuclear testing, you know, way back when. And those islands are still uninhabitable. People cannot live on them. So this is something that, it'll go away in a couple of years. We're talking, you know, many, many, many years, you know, 40, 50 years maybe.
That's right.
Maybe never.
Yeah.
You know.
Paul, good stuff.
But I wanted to throw it out to you and let people really just sit back and think about it.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Really good stuff. And thank you for your service. And I can hear the sincerity in your voice, too, when you talk about the four that have been lost. And there will likely be others. President Trump has said that. Then this is a reality of these kind of operations. Thank you very much, Paul, for the call. That opens up a phone line for you, 701-271-1100. Got a few minutes left here. Whatever you want to add to this conversation. There's been a lot of commentary on what Paul just talked about. And in the email box from Mike, all the people screaming about Iran would be the same people screaming 20 years from now that Trump or any other Republican didn't do something about Iran when the first nuclear warhead hit New York City. You can't fix stupid. Yep, there is that. There is that. Yes, and that's kind of going along with what Britt Hume talked about, too. That, you know, do we have to wait until it looks like, you know, the missiles are on their way before we do something about it? And Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister, said the same thing this morning in a quote, "It's simply not possible to shoot down every Iranian missile and every drone after they have been launched. The only way to stop the threat is to destroy the missiles at sources in their storage depots or at the launches." So there you go, destroy them before they get in the air. Brian in Fargo wants to add to the conversation. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Steve. I just got a question more than anything, and if you ever get an expert on the subject, I would love to hear their take on this. Several weeks ago, months ago, whatever it was, I don't even remember right now, when we sent over the bombers and blew up and destroyed the nuclear capability of Iran, you cannot necessarily destroy the uranium. You could, you know, blow up the centrifuges and the machines and stuff like that. What is the possibility that these guys could have taken the uranium that they produce for nuclear weapons and create dirty bombs? And is it a possibility that some of these weapons that got sent into, say, Israel and other places could have been dirty bombs?
Yeah, good question. And it is a really good question in a bunch of different ways, because I wondered that too. Like, what percent? So we were, the president, you know, obviously told us that Midnight Hammer was very effective. And I don't know that anybody argued that anywhere in the international community after what happened there. But how much of their nuclear program was really taken out is kind of a question there too. And were they able to save the uranium there? And, you know, look, the president is going to obviously highlight the good things about what happened, and he's not going to go through, well, okay, I've got to remind him that this could have might happen, and this little thing that's not how the president operates, and probably it's not what the world and the country needs to hear, but it is a very, I think, legitimate question how much came out of there. They certainly were scrambling to save what they could after it happened, but how much of that got out in creating the bombs you're talking about? Thank you very much for giving a call today. Appreciate you weighing in on that. All right, well, that'll do it for the show today. I know that we could have talked about this all day. I will say at the end of the show what I said at the beginning. I think we all need to be in prayer for our president. We need to be in prayer for our troops, for our country and the world as well. And as believers, if you're one in that category, there's never been a more important time to pray for our country. And I say that all the time, and it keeps escalating, it seems like, but certainly now is the time to do that. The conversation continues with the Scott Henin What's On Your Mind program coming up here in a few. Stay tuned. Have a great day, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.